Hey, I know. I'll use my trusty frying pan as a drying pan.
And welcome to this week's episode of Out of the Drying Pan, a Pokemon the Series podcast, where each week we discuss two episodes of the Pokemon series anime and whatever other random stuff we happen to think about. Just a quick reminder, we are an E for Explicit podcast, so listener discretion is advised. I am your host, Alex, and I'm joined for this very special milestone episode by my co-host, Austin. Hey, Austin.
What milestone would that be, Alex?
Wouldn't you know it? It's our big 200.
Our bicentennial episode.
I know.
Kind of.
Oh my gosh.
Let's explain. If you look in your episode description, you might find a little thing at the very bottom that says what the National Podcastx episode numbering is of this episode. And this is episode 200.
If you had told me when we started this podcast, what was it, 2021?
Was it?
We'd still be doing this? Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah, I'm looking at my mug, my Snorlax mug, established 2021.
Okay, there you go. So, God, we were a COVID birthed podcast.
A misbegotten podcast.
We were going to do it before COVID, and COVID actually waylaid us later than we anticipated. That's what happened.
You could have had us earlier than 2021, but anyway, here we are, 200 Out of the Drying Pan National Dex episodes later. If you're a longtime listener or new to this podcast recently, we're just so thrilled to have you guys. We appreciate every single one of you, and we hope to have 200 more episodes. Woohoo!
Even though not all of them are actually about Pokemon, but that's fine. We count everything. Sailor Moon, Digimon, what else? Yu-Gi-Oh!
Utena, Revolutionary Girl.
We read the entire My Immortal fanfiction for some godforsaken reason. We did that.
Because it's one of the funniest pieces of media ever created by a mystery person that we still don't have answers on.
What was it recently I found out you haven't seen? Was it Birdemic?
No, I can't remember that coming up. Was it something for Halloween?
Like I don't know. Spooky? But have you seen Birdemic?
You know what? I don't think so.
Oh my God, you need to see Birdemic.
Okay, well, who's going to watch it with me?
I just watched it recently again, so I can't do it a second time. Okay, so that reminds me, our weeks. Guess what I've been doing for the month of October?
Watching a horror movie every day.
Correct.
And your theme is sequels, right?
Correct.
So what's been the most recent thing that you've watched?
Actually, the most recent one I watched yesterday was 13 Ghosts. From 1960, which
what?
Was just about the least scary thing you've ever seen in your life, because it was an experiment in, like, 3D glasses technology.
Okay, when you said the 60s, that told me everything. I was like, oh, this isn't going to be scary.
Yeah, not a very effective movie. Even though my theme is sequels, not everything I watch has to be a sequel. But I have seen a bunch of sequels.
What was that really? I'm sorry, this is off topic a little bit. That movie we watched that was also from that time period where it was about the screaming lady.
The Screaming Woman.
Was it the obvious title?
Girl, that was from the 80s. That was not the 60s.
No, it was from the 80s.
Or was it from the 70s?
Oh my God. I don't think it was the 80s. Hold on. Oh, you can type faster than I can.
Oh, 1972. Okay, you were right and I was wrong. Okay.
We were closer to the 60s.
Yes.
That actually, unironically, was a pretty good movie. I think we both thought that was fun.
See, that's the thing, is you have to find the right people to watch stuff like that with, and you can have a blast.
Yeah, because you can commentate.
Which is why I'm telling you, Alex, you can come over anytime to watch a horror movie with me. I will gladly watch.
I'll just show up at your door.
You've done it before.
Remember that one time that I let myself into your house, and I was sitting on your couch?
Scared the shit out of me.
I just want to preface for everybody else, this was planned. I didn't just show up. However, when I got there, Austin was not in because he had stepped out to take out the trash or check the mail or something. And he wasn't answering because he left his phone, I think. And so I was like, well, fuck this. I'm not going to stand out here like a fucking boob and just be like, So I just let myself in and sat on the couch.
All right. So who has some horror movie recommendations for me? I'll watch anything. Well, almost anything.
I don't have a horror movie recommendation for you at the moment, but I also watched something very strange this past week.
Something very strange. Doctor Strangelove.
Oh, no, but I do want to see that. Can you imagine? I've never seen that movie before.
I've seen part of it.
I should watch it. No, but this was a Josh recommendation. He was like, we should watch this movie.
A Josh recommendation. Okay, that could be anything. It's a weird one. That could be literally anything.
think about Josh and his like movie taste, and he picks out some weird stuff. I'm like, what the hell? I've never heard of this in my life.
God, oh.
It's from the 70s. I'll just say, I'll give you a hint.
From the 70s. And it's something I've probably never heard of. Give me a genre.
Never. What the fuck is even this genre? Hold on. I don't even know like what you would classify it as. I got to look up what it says it is because...
Faces of Death? Is that the 70s?
Okay, apparently it's a post-apocalyptic science fantasy film.
Logan's Run.
No.
I don't know. Soylent Green? What year is that?
Okay. No. Good guesses, but no. Wizards?
Wizards.
1977.
Wizards 1977.
Has anybody else out there heard of this or seen it? Because
oh, I've heard of this.
It was wild.
I've never seen it, but I've heard of it.
It reminded me a lot of Fantastic Planet. This is in English, though. This was a weird one. The plot is about Earth that's been devastated by a nuclear war. And then like 2 million years later, things have kind of recovered. And now trolls, fairies, elves, and other creatures like that have returned because they're like ancestors of humanity or whatever. And then you've got the mutants on the other side that are after the radioactive fallout. So then you have this like battle between the mutants and the fairies and stuff. But there's like two opposing wizards that were twins, and one's good, one's evil. And the bad wizard finds propaganda from 1940s and 30s Germany. And so basically he uses Nazi propaganda to manipulate his forces. So it's a fucking wild movie, you guys. And this was marketed for like younger kids. Like this is rated PG.
Well, it's a 77, so there is no PG-13.
It's fucking crazy. I was like, there is no way that this is for kids. No way. So if you're interested, you could find it and check it out. But that was what I watched. It was fucking weird.
Okay, the only Ralph Bakshi movie, is it Bakshi or Bakshi?
I don't know for sure.
The only ones I've seen are The Lord of the Rings and Cool World. And I've seen parts of Fritz the Cat.
Oh, did he do the animated Lord of the Rings stuff?
Looks like he did The Lord of the Rings, but not The Hobbit.
Okay, The Hobbit was what I was thinking of. I was like, wait, what? I mean, it kind of looks like that, but I've never seen Fritz the Cat or any of that stuff.
What have I watched? I watched all sorts of shit. Terrifier 3. I don't know what the hell is going on in those movies.
I can't watch them. Part of me wants to, but you told me I'm not allowed because I'm...
You would not enjoy it.
Too squeamish, yeah.
Saw 2 and 3. I did not enjoy that.
Oh, God. You've watched a lot, and this is just in the past week?
Yeah.
Okay. Austin's efficient.
The Amityville Horror remake with Ryan Reynolds.
Well, it is officially spooky season.
I know. I'm excited for it.
I finally put up my Halloween decorations.
Oh, I need to do the same. All right, let's do this. Episode 200.
Woo! 200, you guys. What a milestone.
Okay, so we have the Advanced Challenge episode, Candid Camerupt, Alex's second attempt at watching that episode.
Yeah.
And the Chronicles episode, Journey to the Starting Line, bringing us back around where we started.
You know what? I kind of loved this episode, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope you get to be the one to do the walkthrough of it while I do, while I do the Flash Challenge.
Is that our official? Did we land on?
I'm going to make it happen. Let's flip the coin, see who does what.
Flash challenge versus walkthrough. Got it.
Okay, so turns out I'm the one doing the Flash challenge for the camera up episode, meaning you're summarizing that one. But you have a special connection to this episode. I don't know if you know that.
I do?
In our first advanced podcast episode, I told you there's an episode called The Family That Battles Together Stays Together. And you said, oh my God, is it the Winstraight family? And I said, no, because it was actually Brock's family.
Oh, so I got too excited about the Winstraights, but now they're here.
Now they are here in all their Winstraighty glory.
Wow.
Are you excited?
I am excited, although I kind of wish they maybe had more oomph. I don't know what oomph. The word is. Oomph.
Oomph, 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 oomph.
Yeah.
Oomph.
But we could talk about them. They're kind of fun. Am I timing you?
Yes, you are.
You're staring at me and I'm staring at you.
Well, I'm waiting for you to time me.
Okay, and you're going to summarize in 3, 2, 1, go.
The Twerps all die in a desert, and they are saved by the Winstraight family, who want to battle them after they insist on being like, hey, Winstraight family, please let us do you a favor. And the Winstraight family's like, battle us. And Twerps are like, okay. Little do they know that Grandma Winstraight has a crazed Camerupt who tries to murder everything in its path. Meanwhile, Team Rocket meet Vito Winstraight, who's a weirdo who hides behind rocks and stares at his family while they talk to no one talking to him.
Time.
I'll repeat what I said a couple episodes ago. These advanced challenge episodes I love dearly. So I can't be objective. I love this episode.
It's not a bad one. I know there's some weeks where we're kind of like, boo, right off the bat. And, you know, we just sort of pan the episode before we even jump in. But, like, I think both of these, honestly, are a good pair.
Yeah. I like how it's pretty much exactly what happens in the game, more or less.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, sometimes when we have, like, direct comparisons, it's like, oh, really? But, like, and we do love when they go crazy and have, like, wacky crap happen. And we're like, what the hell?
I could have done with some more wacky crap, but it was decent comedy.
It was.
I also like all the Twerps got to do something, at least a little bit.
I know, especially Max. I think that was my favorite part, even though I wish it was longer. But we'll walk you through it in depth.
All right, let's do the walkthrough. Hey.
If I say it enough times, then you got to form a habit, right?
Walkthrough. I was thinking like a walkthrough, like a video game walkthrough, like those old Nintendo Power Players guides walkthrough.
Guys, the Prima game guides. I miss when they had those like physical books that you had to flip through to figure it out.
Oh my God, I would get them not to learn how to play the game, but just to get the artwork. Because back in the day, that shit was hard to come by, you know?
Yes. Part of me kind of wishes that I had treated my guidebooks better, but I actually did the thing where I would bring that shit with me to school so I could like read it during recess and stuff or whatever time. And so of course like the cover is all falling off and it's all bent and the spine and everything. But
what games did you have the player's guides for?
I had Ruby and Sapphire and Crystal version.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it.
Okay, were the Nintendo Power brand, or were they some, like...
Prima Game Guides.
Prima, okay.
Yeah. They're around here somewhere still. I have been moving stuff around, and I think they're in a box somewhere, but they're well-loved. They were actually used by a small kid child. Yeah, so... And of course, we have the official Pokemon handbook that I carried everywhere.
I see that every time I'm at any bookstore or any grocery store or anything. I walk by it. And I see the current cover where it's like Pikachu and a fuck ton of Pokemon on the cover. And I'm like, oh, next generations.
How far we've come. I had the original one, you know, with the green border. Anyway. All right. So we are, as Austin said, we're in the desert.
Oh.
And we're dying of...
Oh my God. You know what I forgot to fucking do?
Bring water with you on your journey in the desert?
That too, probably, because I'm stupid. But I also forgot to read out listener feedback from Pokemon Megastar.
We were so excited. We jumped the gun. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Look at us fucking up the episode 200 already.
One of the things Pokemon Megastar says is their headcanon is the Mirage Kingdom is where the Mirage Tower is in the desert on Route 111.
Oh.
Now, do you know about the Mirage Tower?
I have a vague-ish memory.
I looked it up, and it's only an emerald. It's not Ruby and Sapphire. So that leads me to believe the Mirage Kingdom episodes aired in Japan before the Mirage Tower was in Emerald. So perhaps the Mirage Tower is a reference to the Mirage Kingdom? Maybe?
I'd buy it. Interesting. I like the connection either way.
Pokemon Megastar says that the true mission of the Togepis is to steal the joy of humans. Correct. I mean, that's like literally correct. And that was a very weird way to get rid of Togepi. Correct. Very weird.
It was unexpected for sure. Like, out of all these episodes, we had left behind Misty and Togepi, and she got relegated to Chronicles. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, bam, here she is, back in the regular episodes. And also, we're writing out Togepi. Like, what the hell?
So, MVP for the first episode is Jesse and James for their egg-squisite disguises. But they also get the LVP for leaving a giant rope on the side of their blimp for the twerp to climb on. For the second episode, MVP to Togetic for leaving and becoming the new overlord of the paradise. But, and this is something we didn't mention, LVP to Brock for finally getting his ear pulled by Misty again, which is more or less what inspires Max to do the same.
Good point. We didn't give her props for that when we should have.
Right. Because I think Max already has pulled Brock's ear a couple times, but I think now it's going to be like an every episode thing.
So he got the inspo from Misty from that episode then.
More or less, yeah.
I kind of like it. Although I will say we haven't gotten to our favorite Brock...
Cockblocker,
yeah. That's in Diamond and Pearl, which we know, said that a million times, it's our favorite series. So stay tuned for when we finally get there because, wow, it's a doozy. We love Diamond and Pearl.
But get this, the real honorary MVP is going to be Kelsey.
Yay!
Because now Kelsey's appearances are like nostalgia.
Because, oh my God.
Because we've been running so for so long.
Oh my gosh.
Happy 200 episodes!
Woo! Have we done it? Oh my gosh, we have enough episodes to be nostalgic about. That's so crazy!
And that's where I'll stop. You can always read Pokemon Megastar's comments. I usually leave a lot out because they're pretty long comments. But you can read those on Spotify.
Yeah, go ahead, check it out. And also, leave your own.
Yes.
We always appreciate the feedback. So, again, thank you so, so much. All right, back in the desert.
Where there's not a Mirage Tower, nor a Mirage Kingdom. There's just desert.
No. There's just desert, and there's heat, and there's misery all around. And it's just a disaster because, of course, the twerps are unprepared, as always. They have not adequately prepped. They don't have the proper equipment because they're stupid. And so they quickly are expiring in the desert of dehydration and exposure. And Pikachu is the first to go because, of course, he has the fur all over him. So I'm assuming that's miserable. And he is followed in quick succession by Mei, who faints, Max, and Brock instantly is out. And Ash thinks he's invincible. And he's like, no, I will save you all. But then, of course, he passes out as well. So the twerps, like Austin has said, have died. And they are now in Purgatory, which is... also known as the Windstraight House, because that's what happens when you die in a Pokemon world. You wake up in the Windstraight House.
Better than the Mirage Kingdom.
Yeah. If I had a choice of Purgatory and it was between the Mirage Kingdom and the Windstraight House, I'm fucking taking the Windstraight House.
Absolutely.
No question. So, thankfully, it's a Camerupt with a country accent that saves them from exposure.
Camerupt.
I'm not even kidding. It does. It sounds exactly like that. Here, give it to us again.
Oh, I wasn't even trying. Camerupt.
That's a perfect, accurate imitation. It sounded just like that. I thought we would get more country Camerupt, but sadly...
Well, I hope you like Camerupt, because there's two Camerupt episodes in Hoenn, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
Is this in addition to a Numel episode?
Yes, it is.
Oh my god, so somebody really likes Camerupt and Numel, or at least Camerupt.
Are you upset we're seeing Camerupt before Numel? I know the answer is yes.
Yes.
There we go.
Because you know why? Oh no, you've done it. Here we go. You know why? Because it's my absolute, one of my worst pet peeves about Pokemon. And I know why they do it, because they want people to either buy the extra copy, the alternate version, or they want people to trade or whatever. But I loathe when they don't let you catch the base form of a Pokemon in a game and they only let you access the evolved form. I hate that with a passion. Yes, Austin.
How is that related to the anime featuring evolved forms before their previous evolutions?
Because that's exactly it. You get the evolved form before the base form, and I just it's all out of order, and it's infuriating to me. So that's my personal opinion. Maybe other people feel differently. I'm just giving my thoughts.
Just a reminder to the audience, one of us has an OCD diagnosis, and it's not Alex. Can you believe it?
Can you believe that? We have Camerupt and not Numel, sadly. But we're here, and we have just already cut right to the twerps, like, being housed and sheltered, and they've already recovered from their ordeal. And they're chatting with some friendly folks who own this farmhouse. And we learn that they have a farming monopoly in the area because they're the only ones crazy enough to have a farm in the desert.
Yeah, it was giving major Tatooine moisture farmer vibes.
Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen.
R.I.P. They're skeletons now.
R.I.P. But yeah, these people, they don't outright say it right away, but these are the Windstraits. No use prolonging that reveal. They're the people that you fight in succession in the game. They explain that the eldest son of this little family is off doing the League Challenge because he's a prospective Pokemon trainer who is one of the greatest around, and he's off to do the League and bring his family honor and prestige or something, I guess. So they're like, oh, that's really interesting. And Ash is pretty interested in this because he's like, oh my God, the League, I'm doing that. Oh my goodness. The little girl of the family is also quite forward, and she has a crush on Max, of course. May is like, ooh, Max is, that's so cute. You've got a little crush. Ah. So she's kind of tickled by that. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is also wandering the desert unprepared. They're miserable and thirsty, and they also pass out. But instead of being saved by the Camerupt, they happen to be rescued by a boy who looks suspiciously just like the other Windstraight family. And of course, this is Vito, the oldest son. He's traveling, and he happens across them and offers them food and says to them, hey guys, so I'm actually struggling with some familial trauma, and I can't go home because I'm too ashamed of my dream, I guess, of being a Pokemon breeder.
This episode is a metaphor.
It really is.
He's doing a different kind of breeding.
His family expects one lifestyle or path for him, and he has realized that that is not the lifestyle for him, and he doesn't know how to go home and tell them and come out to his family that he doesn't want to be a trainer. He wants to be a Pokemon breeder or something. I'm assuming it's breeder.
Remind me, in the game, he's in Victory Road, right?
Is he?
I'm pretty sure. Okay, I thought you would know this as our Hoenn expert, but I will look it up.
Oh no, I'm the Hoenn expert? Oh no.
You're more of a Hoenn expert than I am.
He's somewhere. I don't recall exactly where.
I'm just trying to remember if he said any of this, like, I don't want to be a trainer stuff in the game. Okay, he is in Victory Road.
Okay.
And does he have any quotes?
Does he have, what's his team?
I passed that by this point.
Oh.
Okay, here's his quotes in the original Gen 3. I trained with my whole family, every one of us. I'm not losing to anyone. Better than my family? Is that possible? I was better than everyone in my family. I've never lost before. I've lost my confidence. Maybe I'll go home.
That's kind of depressing.
Oh, and he says the same thing in Oras.
Okay. And what's his team, does it say?
His Ruby Sapphire team is Swellow, Kadabra, Manectric, and Shiftry.
Oh, God. Shiftry. Get the fuck out of here.
Thank God he didn't have a Shiftry in this episode that we saw.
I know. Good Lord. I would have hated that.
The fact that they replaced Kadabra with Alakazam makes me wonder if we're already trying to avoid Kadabra at this point.
Oh, because of the lawsuit?
Yeah. Have we ever talked about this before?
I don't know.
Uri Geller? Is that his name?
Maybe not. Okay, well, do you want to, like, just briefly give a background?
Okay, I'm not an expert on this, and I don't have the sources in front of me, but Kadabra spent a very long time being not able to appear in the TCG or the anime because of the magician suing because his Japanese name. and the spoon bending thing were clearly based on him. Uri Geller? I don't know names.
That was the allegation, at least.
Well, I think it was a true allegation. It's a thing.
Okay, you know what? Okay, now I'm invested. Here we go. Another out of the drying pan aside.
But the end of the story was, I think what happened was people grew up and became adults who were children in the 90s, and they were like, that's not cool. We like Pokemon. And he was like, okay, never mind. I will drop my litigation. And Kadabra is now able to be used again.
So this is a Polygon article that I just Googled real quick. This was as of November 30th, 2020. So relatively recent. But the thing here says, Magician ends 20-year battle with Nintendo over Pokemon card. 2 decades ago, magician and illusionist Uri Geller, so you were right about the name, sued Nintendo in a California court for the Kadabra Pokemon card, alleging the company used his likeness to create the character. He is known for his spoon-bending trick, just like Kadabra. Now he's apologizing for the lawsuit, which he claimed Nintendo turned him into a, quote, evil occult Pokemon character. Sure, dude. And stole his identity by using his name and signature image. So, does he look like a cat?
Yeah, I don't think he looks like a Kadabra, but...
The hell?
The name is a reference to him. That's like, you can't avoid that.
I mean, Abracadabra Alakazam is like a generic thing.
No, right? No.
Maybe I'm wrong. Ooh.
The Japanese name is Yungerer.
Oh, okay. Okay. So maybe there's a little bit of merit with that part anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the lawsuit was dismissed in 2003. However, he reportedly filed several other lawsuits. But he wrote that he was sorry for what he did 20 years ago. Kids and grown-ups, I am releasing the ban. It is now all up to Nintendo to bring back my Pokemon card. It will probably be one of the rarest cards now. Much energy and love to all. The Pokemon company, of course, says it has nothing to share at this time when asked about him and the reprinting of the cards. But for now, they have his blessing to do it, apparently. So, obviously, the lawsuit didn't go anywhere.
After that, though, was the release of the very famous, very popular, very sought-after Pokemon 151 card set that had Kadabra for the first time in many, many, many years.
So, was that one of the things that made it so popular, is the fact that that was included?
That was the whole premise, was it was like, all 151 of the originals are back, baby!
Okay. Wow.
People still to this day fight other people in Costco's to get those goddamn 151 cards.
I try to keep out of that whole thing. Like, I just think it's bonkers. Like, when I watch clips of people literally assaulting each other in a Costco or some other store for fucking Pokemon cards, and keeping it so that children can't get their hands on this stuff. I mean, it's just shameful. It's shameful behavior.
Was it COVID that really boosted that into the stratosphere? I think it was.
Yeah, because people were willing to pay extra to get their hands on stuff that you couldn't find or you couldn't go out to get readily available. So I'm sure, like, the whole throttling of the supply chain and then the subsequent, you know, keeping the supply low and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. It's a whole fucking mess.
Sorry, I completely derailed us when I noticed he had an Alakazam and not a Kadabra. Sorry.
Well, that's obviously the reason. Now that we've... It didn't even occur to me, but that makes perfect sense. Okay, so James is a real empathetic character this episode because he's like, you know what? Oh my gosh, I know exactly how you feel. I also have familial trauma and I understand exactly what you're going through, being the outcast of the family. And so he offers to Vito to talk to his scary grandma on his behalf. Total stranger. He's like, I know what it's like. I will help. I will talk to grandma. Grandmama, as he says. But Vito's like, you might regret that when you actually meet her, because she's definitely a force of nature. Back at the house, Ash, they're about to leave, actually. They got their shit packed up. They're about to go. But, of course, the one time Ash and friends aren't just like, thanks for everything, bye, thank you for letting us take advantage of your kindness. They actually insist this time for some reason. Like, please, you helped us out. Let us repay you for your kindness.
We need to fill 22 minutes.
Exactly. And so this opens up a whole can of worms of loony buffoonery, because now that they've got that fire lit under grandma, she's like, well, now that you've offered, there is one thing you could do. And they're like, we want to battle you. And they're like, what? A battle? And they're like, of course a battle. It's so boring around here. There's nothing to do. There's not a mall for miles. We don't even have TV. It's so fucking boring. Like, please battle us. We have no other form of entertainment. So they all agree to battle with the Winstrays. And it's not just Ash, funnily enough. And I'm kind of glad it wasn't just Ash doing this whole thing. It was all the twerps. They're all involved. So because Max isn't old enough to be a trainer for some reason, even though it seems like Vivi, the little girl, is, and they're the same age, which is really weird. He's like, well, I don't have a Pokemon. Like, Ash, I need to borrow one of yours. So that's how they get around that loophole. We start out with our battle. I guess it's like a one-on-one, but they each battle one of the Winstraights.
I'm really glad they decided to go that route. But there's four Winstraights. There's four twerps. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. That was a good decision.
Yeah, I would have hated if it was just like one succession, like after another, and it was just like Ash or something like that. That would have been boring. But we start out with Victor, the dad, versus Brock. Victor uses his Zigzagoon to start against Mudkip. And they think they have this in the bag pretty easy. It's just a Zigzagoon, like not a threat at all. But shockingly, no pun intended.
Hey.
Ayo, Zigzagoon knows Thunderbolt. Because I think they explain it. They're like, well, we don't have a power generator or anything. So we taught this electric move to the Pokemon so that he could power our house.
God, that poor Zigzagoon.
I know. Is this the sole Pokemon? Do they not have any other battery backup power at all? This poor thing. So because Mudkip is not a ground type, I was reminded of that again this episode. It's not a ground type. Not even partly. It's a water type. So Mudkip doesn't do very well and gets one hit KO'd. Goodbye, Mudkip. So that's it for that round. Round one over. Next up is the wife and mom, Victoria, which is kind of weird. Okay, wait. I have to ask. I can't remember exactly. Grandma is whose mom?
Do they even say whose mom she is?
I don't know if they said in the anime, but do we know in the show? I think.
Well, if her last name is Winstraight, presumably.
Then it's Victor.
If Mrs. Winstraight took Mr. Winstraight's name, she would be the dad's mother.
Yes.
That's not necessarily true, but, you know, we're making presumptions here.
Yeah, I don't think it says. It just says the family consists of father Victor, mother Victoria, daughter Vivi, son Vito, and grandmother Vicky.
I mean, I will just say I just watched some of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sequels.
Oh.
Which also has some confusing family dynamics in a weird, aggressive family living by themselves in a rural area. I wouldn't be too surprised if Victor and Victoria have some genes in common. They share those genes.
You know how shows and games are. Like, you can't trust shit because the husband and wife, even though they're supposed to technically not be related at all, they look the same. I'm looking at you, Lusamine and Moan. Like, come on.
They look like brother and sister, yes.
It's very disturbing.
Very Milhouse's parents, yeah.
Yes. I'm looking at a picture and I'm trying to, like, determine, like, I mean, I don't know. It looks like Grandma looks a little bit more like Victor, so she's got the same face shape.
This is the anime.
Yes.
I mean, the Pokemon anime design aesthetic is so simple, it's impossible to say so-and-so looks like so-and-so, because everyone has the same face,
looks
more
like
or less.
Looks like so-and-so. But she has the more square jaw, and that's kind of like what Victor has versus Victoria's round face. So that's what our official stance on at least this podcast is.
Okay.
Is Grandma is Victor's mother.
She's also Victoria's mother.
Oh my god. No.
I considered watching Victor Victoria in honor of this episode, but I simply did not have the time. I had to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3.
What on earth is Victor Victoria?
Oh, it's a famous movie. You don't know this?
No. Oh, here we go. Sidetracked again.
It's actually a pretty progressive movie for 1982. It's a musical comedy. We need to watch it.
We can do that. Put it on our list.
I won't watch Cabaret right now, at this moment in time.
Okay.
Because it's too depressing to watch right now. But I will watch Victor Victoria with you.
Put that on the list of stuff to do the next time we hang out.
Maybe you and Josh should watch Cabaret and see what happens when fascism takes over a country in real time.
Yeah, just like that movie I watched, Wizards. It's how, you know, propaganda brainwashes people into committing atrocities. So
exactly.
I was just going to mention, I think it's kind of interesting that Victor and Victorious have the same name.
That's why I'm suspicious.
I mean, you could have somebody who has the same name that marries each other, or same last name even.
That is very possible, but I'm just like, coincidences are adding up on this one.
I know, it's too many. Questionable family dynamics aside, next up is Victor. Or next up is Victoria.
See?
And
Julie Andrews was there. It was a whole thing.
And she has a Roselia. And of course, May, who's next up, has PTSD because she's like, oh my God, it's Roselia, Drew, oh my God. And she has flashbacks to her time battling him in the contest, and she can't believe it. So, of course, she freaks out and goes all out with Beautifly because she can't stand it. And so she easily wins. R.I.P. Roselia.
Oh my God, congratulations, May and Beautifly.
I know, she's actually got a little bit of battling chops now, but I think it was because of her rage towards it.
And type advantage.
And type, yeah, and the type advantage, of course. Now we have Max, who's third. And of course, he is up against Vivi, the other little girl. And for his pick of Ash's Pokemon that he's being lent, he chooses Corphish, which is surprising.
Yeah, why Corphish?
I don't know. I didn't think he really had a bond. I honestly thought he was going to pick Talo for some reason. I don't know why. What did you think he was going to pick?
I mean, I remembered this episode because these episodes are near and dear to my heart, so it was no surprise to me.
Okay, putting that out of your mind then. Like, if you could choose a Pokemon for him, like, who do you think he would pick? Treecko or Talo?
I think he would pick Treecko because he wanted to see if he wanted to have it as a starter.
That is such a good point. Yeah, he is a Treecko fan, isn't he? But for some reason, he uses Corphish. I don't know. And Vivi has a Meryl. Max, of course, starts off distracted by his crush on her, which you think, oh no, he's going to lose because he's distracted. But he ends up winning anyway, not because of his strategy. Like, Max is like, okay, first I want you to harden, and I have this whole strategy, and we're going to play it defensively because that's kind of his MO.
Yeah, that's not the first time he's done that.
I know. Well, I thought about that immediately because I'm like, we already had that overanalyzing moment from him where he couldn't get his mind out of his, like, readings and his, like, okay, let me just think about this, and lost the battle because he took too long. But Corphish disobeys, which I was kind of disappointed in Corphish.
You were?
Well, we know he's a headstrong kind of Pokemon, but I thought for sure Ash would have been like, okay, Corphish.
Ash is the one I'm disappointed with.
Yeah, okay, fair. That's a better...
Corphish, I'm not surprised at all. Corphish being like, you're not my trainer. This is my battle. Step off.
Okay, you're right. I guess I'm a little bit more disappointed, should be disappointed with Ash, because I thought they would have a little scene at least where Ash was like, okay, Corphish, Max is going to borrow you for this battle. Make sure to listen to him and, you know, we'll see how this goes, but we don't see that, or he doesn't do that or whatever. And so Corphish disobeys immediately and just jumps right in and beats the shit out of Meryl and wins.
And looks so proud of himself.
And Vivi is an absolute sore loser. And she's like, I hate you, Max. Get the hell away from me. I never want to see your face again around these parts. And of course, Max's heart is broken.
Yeah, that was really funny. That was a funny sequence.
So that's the end of that, I guess. No Max and Vivi later on in life. She's like, I never want to see that kid again. Before we can get to the ultimate battle of Grandmama and Ash.
Trainers.
Oh, yes, of course. I don't get the trainer's choice. Interrupt me.
Trainers, which one of these Pokemon is the best to battle Camerupt?
Oh, okay. What's our choice?
Beedrill, Nuzleaf, and Magcargo.
What? I'm sorry, what?
What would you choose to battle Camerupt? Beedrill, Nuzleaf, or Magcargo?
I mean, I guess I'd pick Magcargo for lack of any other options.
Okay, trainers, you may lack options, but if you chose Nuzleaf, you were right.
What? Help. I don't understand.
I can't
what's
help
happening.
You because Ash is wrong. He's wrong.
I think this might be the most egregious mistake yet.
Maybe they were going for grass beat ground type. But fire beats grass, so Nuzleaf is a terrible option.
Maybe I'm not, like, looking at this the right way. I mean,
the entire reason I'm doing the trainer's choice is so we can point and laugh at how incorrect they are. So this one's incorrect.
This is really... Okay, well, I have to think about it anymore because I'm like, okay, when I got the Mudkip thing wrong, I was feeling so silly because I misremembered it, but...
Don't doubt yourself. Doubt Trainer's choice.
I'll doubt Ash. Ash is wrong, and he should be just absolutely ashamed of himself.
Actually, he makes an error in this episode about Camera Opt itself, so...
Did we get to that part? Because I don't know if I...
No, we're going to get there in a second.
Okay, well, if I don't mention it, and I don't think I do, interrupt me, because...
Okay.
Well, thank you, Austin. That was a very bad Trainer's choice. Team Rocket and Vito, they're here. They've arrived home. They don't see anyone when they peek inside the windows like freaks instead of just knocking on the door like normal people. They like peek inside and they're like, nobody's home. That's so weird. And Vito's like, well, I'm sure they're probably outside in our giant battlefield that we have in the backyard. And so they go around the back and they see that that is true. They're battling. And they hide out behind some rocks, undetected. So now we have Ash versus Grandma. And Grandma is Camerupt's trainer. And we've got Camerupt versus another great pick by Ash, Pikachu. Why oh why, Ash? Why oh why?
Because this is where Ash makes his error, and he doesn't realize Camerupt is a ground type.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He tries to use Thunderbolt.
I'm so disappointed in him, too, because the earlier scene, when he learns about Camerupt and, like, what a Camerupt is after they're rescued, he pulls out Dexter. The entry is red. Like, he should have figured it out then. Yes?
We do not misgender and dead name Dextet.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Dextet.
Mm-hmm. That's her name. Mistake.
Dextet. Dextet! I don't know. She doesn't say, or Ash doesn't listen or something, but at that point... That should have been the point that we learned. It's a fire ground type. Does she say it? I'm pretty sure she always does.
I have no idea.
Camerupt to fire and ground type. Or maybe that's later. I don't know.
Is it from Journeys Forward that they show the types on the screen? I don't remember.
This is Ash's dumb mistake. He should know better. So yeah, he calls out Pikachu. It's not doing very well. But eventually, when its electric attacks are failing, because of course it's a ground type, Ash resorts to physical brute strength. And he's like, okay, Iron Tail right in the face. Which enrages Camerupt because, I mean, I don't know about you, but if somebody hit me in the face with, like, an iron pan or something, I would also be angry.
He should have used a Nuzleaf.
So, of course, Camerupt's rage is triggered, and it starts using an eruption attack. Team Rocket is like, we are noping the hell out of here when the flaming rubble starts flying all around. The Windstraits are very rude to their guests because while they pull out construction helmets because they know what's coming, they leave the kids to fend for themselves. And they're like, well, if you get hit in the head and die, that's not our problem. So finally, it's raging so much that it confuses itself and it starts on a rampage and it's headed right towards the house and all the crops and their livelihood. Oh my God. And nobody can handle anything, and everybody just stands there with their mouths open, like, oh my god, what do we do? So Vito, thankfully, is behind the rock, hiding, and he's like, oh, I have to do something. I'm the only one. So he calls out his Alakazam.
Not Kadabra.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Alakazam, I guess, I didn't look this up, but I'm assuming it can use Rain Dance, since he has it use Rain Dance. Which calms down Camerupt and puts its fire out, so thank you, Vito. But just when we think all is calm and everything is fine and we can get back to the battle or whatever we're going to do next, Team Rocket has appeared in their Meowth balloon, and they swipe Pikachu with Handy Andy.
James gave Vito a Handy Andy, yes.
Yes, he did. And Vito helps out again, still hidden behind the rocks, and this time he calls out his Swellow. And blast them off again. So thank you, Vito. And we kind of get a sweet moment from Grandma, who deduces that some gentle so-and-so somewhere is helping them nearby. And she thinks that that person might be somebody that they know very near and dear to their hearts. And that maybe she shouldn't have pushed this person so hard to be a trainer when that was not his dream. And that he should follow his heart because we only have one life to live. And you should be true to yourself and be authentic, despite what societal pressures might be out there and people saying that you should hide your true desires. So,
I mean, Vito, you're getting a very loud apology and like renewal of unconditional love there. That's a lot more than a lot of us get, Vito. Maybe you should come out from behind the rocks.
Sadly, Vito does not come out.
He vetoes this conversation.
Yeah, he doesn't come out of his rocks.
Rock closet.
I just thought this was kind of shitty of him, to be honest. I'm like, all this buildup in his head that he's done regarding what his family might think. You know, he obviously has trepidation and fear of disappointment, which, you know, he's internalized a lot of this. His family has obviously, they're telling him right there, like, we accept you, we love you, whatever you want to do. Like, we're not going to judge you. We want you to be happy. I think he should have come out right there and been like, oh my gosh. And they could have had a tearful reunion, because I'm not sure how long he's been gone away for, but he doesn't. And it's kind of weird that he doesn't. But like, you know, maybe on his own time, maybe he needs time. I don't know.
He has to go meet Wally on Victory Road.
But yeah, so he just leaves. He doesn't even go inside or say hello or introduce himself to Ash or any of that stuff. And yeah, that's it. The Torps leave, and I don't know if we ever see these folks again.
No, we do not.
We do not. Okay.
I don't know. I thought it was a cute, serviceable episode.
Yeah, it wasn't one of the worst, and I kind of liked it. Not a bad one.
All right, let's flip the coin for MVP, LVP, and quote. You're going first.
I think my LVP is going to be Vito, because he has some misconceptions, which I'm not blaming him for that. You know, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of acceptance within yourself to talk to your family about certain things. And I'm not disparaging him that. However, I will say he's kind of a shithead for trying to loop in other people like unrelated to him to say like, oh, like talk to my family for me. Like,
I think he gets LVP for, like, peeking in through windows and hiding behind things and, like, running off into the distance so no one sees him.
He's so weird. Like, I'm like, okay, sure. Like, you're kind of sneaking around and that's, like, strange, but...
Not to mention he's, like, walking in circles a mile away from the house, just being like, nobody knows I'm here.
Well, he's obviously struggling a lot. Like, he wants to go home, but he's, like, put himself in this, like, self-imposed exile and, like... I don't know. And then he just finds like some randos in the desert and he's like, oh my God, can you talk to my grandmother for me? Like, that's not going to help you, Vito. It's not going to help your family. You got to be true to yourself. Like, nobody's saying you have to come right now and, you know, have this conversation with them. But like, this is something you have to do for yourself. Like, nobody else can do this. So he needs to do some more soul searching, I suppose.
He needs some therapy.
He does need therapy, intense therapy. Or he needs to be, like, hypnotized by Alakazam or something and, you know, overcome his trauma with, like, exposure therapy. I don't know.
But not Kadabra, because that way leads to a lawsuit.
My MVP, I don't know, gosh. you know what, okay, I say this like I just dragged Vito for not, like, confronting his emotions and stuff, but I'm going to give MVP to James.
Okay. James hardly ever gets MVP, so let's give it to him.
Okay, I'm gonna kind of be a little hypocritical, because I was like, Vito should handle his own problems, but I do appreciate the fact that James was very quick to step in and be like, you know what, I am willing to help you, stranger kid, and I'll talk to your grandma, like, just because, you know, he doesn't know at that point, right? Maybe this lady is volatile, maybe she isn't accepting, maybe she is, like, bigoted or something. Like, we don't know. He doesn't know. And so he's like, I will take this responsibility on. I'll be the one to act as like a buffer, because I know what it's like to deal with this kind of thing. So I'll help you out. So I thought that was nice of him in that regard. My quote. Okay, I think I'm going to go with this one from the beginning when Team Rocket's wandering the desert and James says, now I know what a hot dog feels like.
Damn it.
Boiled in my own juices. And Meowth says, damn it. I'm sorry. Meowth replies, I'm sweating here like a Snorlax in leather pants.
I love how you do Meowth's voice every time.
I can't do it good at all. I'm so sorry, no, Maddie Meowstein. Oh, it was funny though.
Oh man, I don't really have any good quotes.
I have a couple more.
Could you send me some? Because mine are not very good.
There's one, and then here, I have another one. There, you have two options. I had two other ones.
Okay, I'm going to go with your Team Rocket quote, which was when they're peering through the windows and Jesse says, "Doesn't look like anyone's home." And James says, "Unless they're very tiny."
It kind of gave me like Trick House vibes, you know, like in Ruby and Sapphire when you go in and he's like hiding behind stuff. Like,
I was thinking of the borrowers.
The bar. Oh, those little. Yeah. Okay. Oh my gosh. I remember that.
Okay. My MVP is going to be Beautifly for getting a decisive victory against Roselia.
Finally.
And my LVP will be Ash for not preparing Corphish for Max, not preparing Max for Corphish, and then not scolding Corphish for acting wild.
I know. He didn't say anything about acting a fool and disobeying Max. So,
in fact, he congratulated Max.
Well, a win's a win in Ash's mind. He doesn't care how he gets there. I mean, see all the times that Ash has won in questionable ways.
Magnet sickness.
Magnet sickness. Recalling Pokemon to send them right back in.
Oh my god, when we finally get there, you're going to be like over the moon with excitement.
I am going to lose my mind.
Okay.
That one time, just recently actually, was it Treecko that he recalled like right before it got hit?
Yeah, I think it was like mid-blow.
Mid-attack, yeah.
And the recoil of the Pokeball was so strong that Ash's arm got thrust back by the force of the beam. Okay, let's do the Chronicles one.
All right. I have to do the Flash Challenge.
Yeah, and you can interrupt me anytime during my walkthrough because you seem to really like this episode.
I do. I like it. I think it's fun.
Well, get ready to Flash Challenge in 3, 2, 1, go.
We're at the Oak Lab today, and some domino effect stuff happens that basically culminates with Tauros rampaging and busting through the Oak Lab wall, which causes Oak to lose the starters that he has for the mayor's son who's coming to visit today. This kid, Gilbert, is a piece of garbage. He's the worst ever. He's such a brat, and he starts out with affluenza, but over the course of trying to find the Pokemon, learns the value of friendship, and ends up with Bulbasaur.
Is this our second Pallet Town Chronicles episode? I don't remember. It feels like more.
Was the only other one we had when Butch and Cassidy came to kidnap Oak?
I guess there was that one. It was a Johto episode where Bulbasaur got killed by a falling rock.
Oh, right.
But that wasn't Chronicles, though.
I guess. It does feel like more. I'm with you. I don't know, but I think maybe you're right.
So, we're at the Oak Lab, and unlike last time, Phanpy exists.
Yeah.
Phanpy is out of his ball. And like you said, there's like a Rube Goldberg machine of chaos because some dancing Meryl make Kingler dizzy. He pinches Phanpy. Phanpy rolls down a hill, launches Totodile into the air. Totodile falls next to Snorlax and is nearly flattened by Snorlax. Snorlax rolls down. Actually, he body surfs down the hill, chases Cyndaquil off a cliff. Cyndaquil is launched into the air, launches off a flamethrower, and that startles the Tauros, who go running in the direction of the building.
Whoops.
Meanwhile, inside the building, Oak is click, click, clacking away at his Jirachi reports on his computer. And Tracy comes in after chasing off Muk. And Tracy says, "Professor Oak, you need to eat your breakfast. It's the most important meal of the day. And also, weren't you supposed to look at the starter Pokemon that came in today for the new trainer who's the mayor's son?" Tracy has a lot of exposition to get through this episode.
Tracy is practicing being a nagging wife.
Yes, he is, because Oak needs one, because Delia does not live there. The doorbell rings, and Tracy runs off to greet the mayor's son. But it's actually Delia who's bringing her spices that Professor Oak requested.
I guess questions.
From her spice garden, yes?
Okay, first question. One, Jirachi reports. That's interesting. Which isn't really
one of the Jirachi reports, yeah.
Like a statement. But anyway, yeah, what are those, for one thing? I guess Ash and them reported back after they went to the Jirachi festival and told him all about that. Secondly, what are these herbs? Are these like the aphrodisiac herbs? Like what's going on here?
Unclear.
I think it's aphrodisiac herbs. That's my headcanon.
Yeah, it's definitely aphrodisiac herbs.
Maybe it's herbs. Or maybe she's bringing like weed and stuff and they're going to get like high together.
That's also very possible.
Could be.
So after Delia arrives with her goods from her grow house, Tracy is attacked by Muk and is like plastered to the floor. And at that moment, the Tauros run through the living room, creating two holes in the walls.
Could you imagine if you're just sitting there in your house? And that'd be like a car driving through your wall.
Well, this is what happens when you own 30 Tauros. Actually, your, like, fuck buddy's son owns 30 Tauros at your home. And they just charge through your living room. And there's suddenly a little boy there named Gilbert. Gilbert Mayer.
Gilbert Mayer.
And he's like, that's cool. There's, like, holes in the wall.
Okay, when did What's Eating Gilbert Grape come out? Like, what the hell? Why are they calling him Gilbert of all names?
That was like a 90s movie.
Yeah, it was. That's what I was asking.
I mean, what would you call him if not Gilbert?
I don't know. Gilbert's like a douchebag kid name, so.
I don't know. Skidmark?
Basically.
So, Skidmark here
is, oh my god,
not a fan of the Kanto starters. He wants a Hoenn starter because one kid in his class came from Hoenn with, I think, a Torchic or something. He's like, ugh, the Kanto starters are so played out. He knows, just as well as we do, that Kanto is overrated.
I mean, he's kind of a real one for this. I mean, his delivery is shitty, of course. Like, he's obviously a spoiled brat. But the sentiment is there, right? Where he's like, Kanto is so overrated. It's so overdone. Please, something else for once.
For the love of God, something not Charmander, Bulbasaur, or Squirtle. Give me anything else.
I say that as, like, Bulbasaur being my favorite starter, but anyway.
Well, true. Hold on. I have a theory.
Oh. Analyzing.
Okay. Are you analyzing.
What are you doing? Oh my god, Austin is so focused.
Okay. Here is my theory.
Calculations complete.
This episode aired on Japanese television October 2003.
Okay.
Fire Red Leaf Green came out in Japan January 2004.
Ah.
Do you think this episode's promoting Fire Red Leaf Green?
Well, you know what? Considering the fact that the Pokemon anime exists solely to be an advertisement for merchandise and the games, yes, I will say that's probably very obviously the case.
I think after this air, they probably had like a 5-minute infomercial for Fire Red and Leaf Green for the Game Boy Advance.
Full disclosure, Fire Red and Leaf Green are great remakes. Just putting that out there, they're awesome.
That's true. Get ready for Fire Red and Leaf Green content to appear in the main anime, by the way.
Great, I'm so excited.
Mm-hmm. You know that advertising cycle.
Yep.
So Gilbert wants something to do with these Kanto starters. He wants a Pikachu. He heard that some kid from Pallet Town got a Pikachu, and he's like doing pretty well. So we'll give him a Pikachu. And Delia's like, oh, that's my son Ash. But there were special circumstances that day. No one questions what those special circumstances were.
Well, doesn't Oak say something like, very special? Or so he says something to that effect.
Very special. I traveled through time with a Celebi to the present, and I saw that Ash had a Pikachu, so I had to give him a Pikachu and set up this elaborate scenario in which three other kids also got starters on the same day, including my grandson, Gary.
Those are the special circumstances.
That is true.
That's exactly those circumstances that they're talking about.
Yeah, Gilbert's not the chosen one, so he doesn't get a Pikachu.
He doesn't get the explanation either, so.
Meanwhile, Tracy is pissed the fuck off because Gilbert is such a little asshole. And he's like, you just want a strong Pokemon to start with? That ruins the whole point. You gotta be able to raise your Pokemon and grow with it, and it teaches you more about yourself than you teach it. And all this kind of stuff. He's like, you know, spouting platitudes.
Well, obviously Gilbert has not heard the original Pokemon theme song, You Teach Me and I Teach You Pokemon, so.
He only heard the Gotta Catch 'Em All part.
Yeah, duh.
But it doesn't matter anyway, because the starters all ran off in fear when the bowls ran through the living room. So we end up splitting into two search parties.
Oh, I have to ask. We didn't even talk about this. I just had a random thought pop into my head.
Okay.
Gilbert, like, sits in Oak's rickety office chair, and Oak is like, oh my god, that's my special chair. I'm very attached to that. Please don't sit in that chair. And I have to just, I'm curious, like, what is so great about this chair? Is it, like, your chair that you're sitting in now? Like, you won't get rid of it, even though it's, like, a terrible chair?
I was gonna give an answer, but then you said that, and I can't say it anymore.
Oh no! I need to know. What were you going to say?
My answer was going to be, well, obviously that's Professor Oak's jerk-off chair.
Oh.
In front of the desktop computer because smartphones don't exist yet.
I'm sorry. I should know better than to question a guy and his jerk-off chair.
Yeah, of course. Everyone has a jerk-off chair.
Can't understand.
Anyway.
Anyway.
But then you said it's like my chair, which I think is more accurate because even though this is a terrible desk chair, I will not get rid of it until it falls to pieces because I don't want to spend money.
Oh my God.
You hear it cracking and making noise every time I move.
I know. I just feel so bad for your poor lumbar spine. Who needs a lumbar?
No, I don't.
Okay.
There goes.
Anyway. You know what? I hope a Tauros busts through your wall, smashes your chair, and leaves, and then finally you'll be able to get a new chair.
Okay, you cannot put that curse on me, Ricky Bobby, because I literally had that big tree fall outside my window, and it's only by the grace of, I guess, Arceus that it fell that way and crushed someone else's car and didn't fall this way and crush my home.
That is very lucky. That is true.
Not to mention that time there was a fire outside my window.
Yeah, Austin is just surrounded at all times by chaotic occurrences. What's going to happen next? Who knows?
Never own, kids. It's a scam. Just like every other fucking thing in this world. Okay, anyway, the starters are missing. Oh my God. So we split into two groups. The first group is Delia, Mimey, and Tracy. And the other group is Professor Oak, Gilbert, and Bulbasaur. Which group would you prefer to be a part of?
God, probably Delia, Mimey, and Tracy, just because I cannot stand that little kid and his obnoxious everything. He's so infuriating.
Have we gotten used to Tracy, or has Tracy gotten not as bad as he used to be when we saw him all the time?
I mean, I guess he's, well, I would say he'd mellowed out, but no, he's still, like, nagging Professor Oak and, like, not leaving. So, I will say he did kind of verbalize what we were probably all thinking about Gilbert.
Like, fuck off, Gilbert.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I'm still, after all this time, I'm neutral about Tracy. I can't decide.
Okay.
It's like when you like a certain song by a certain artist. It's like you don't like the whole album all the time, but you like certain songs. So it's like certain moments I like, but not the whole Tracy.
Do you like the headband, or do you like his haircut?
God, no. No to either of those things.
Do you like his bright, weird, green, giant t-shirt? Or do you like his red shorts?
Fugly. Even fuglier than Misty's new outfit.
No, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, that's... I'm being dramatic. But I am sad that they didn't give him an updated outfit.
He never gets one.
I know. Of all the people, like, all the Torp-adjacent people, like, he doesn't get an updated outfit. Not even for, like, his homemaking at the Oak Lab. Like... Poor Tracy.
God. I noticed in this episode, Delia's clasp thing on her, like, pink top is the same one that Misty has on her new yellow top.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
That is weird. I mean, did Misty get her clothes from Delia? Like, what's going on?
I mean, it's kind of got, like, a Flintstones vibe a little bit with, like, don't you think it's kind of ooga booga?
Yeah, I mean, Delia's outfit was always very matronly, and I'm like, girl... Like, we know you're so much more fashionable than that. Like, you gotta rock that body that you got, like...
Yeah, for a while there, Delia was, like, cycling through a different outfit every episode. And then she just settled on the pink one that we first met her in.
The worst one.
So, meanwhile, Professor Oak and Gilbert and Bulbasaur find, like, the unnamed old woman who runs the town supermarket / DJ radio booth.
Isn't her name Masai or something?
Where did you get that from? Is that her Japanese name?
Yeah, I think it's... I don't know if she's got like a dub name, but I got it from Bulbapedia. But I think she says it.
Oh, she
actually,
does?
Actually, I think she says DJ Masai or something.
Oh, she does?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, she's like the local radio station DJ lady, which is kind of fun. I like that.
She's a great character because she comes up and she says, Professor Oak, did you see the new Pokemon Monthly on Lugia sightings? Which were probably all sightings by Ash and his friends, by the way.
Yeah. Fair.
And Professor Oak's like, I don't have time for Lugia sightings. We are looking for these escape starters. Don't tell anyone, okay? And she's like, I won't tell a soul. And then runs over to her DJ station and announces through a PA system all throughout Pallet Town Listen up, this is DJ Masai, and we're looking for some lost baby Bulbasaur, Squirtle, and Charmander. Everyone look out for them. They're on the loose. Professor Oak is incompetent.
I love that they have a town PA system.
It's probably like a warning system. Remember that time the Pokemon of Pokemopolis nearly leveled the town?
Oh, yeah. Maybe that was in response to that. Like, they're like, we need an early warning system.
I'm going to kind of speed through these real quick, the starter saving scenes. They find the Charmander is stupidly looking at the river water and is going to drown and die. Tracy runs up to save it from drowning, but he starts drowning himself. So Mimey levitates them both to safety. LOL.
Why couldn't Mimey just levitate Charmander from the get-go?
That's a good question.
Yeah, not the best showing, Mimey.
He could have made, like, an invisible bridge over the water, but whatever.
You know, well, we know Mimey lives for chaos, and he's probably like, what's gonna happen? Oh, I want to see what happens.
Okay, meanwhile, Professor Oak and Gilbert, they're, like, on the side of a cliff, and Gilbert's, like, afraid to fall to his death because there's no, like, handrails or anything. And Professor Oak is like, you're a coward. This is not that dangerous, walking off the side of a cliff. You need to be more courageous if you're going to go on a Pokemon journey. Gilbert's like, no, I don't want to die. I just want a big, powerful Pokemon to protect me if I'm going to be in dangerous situations. And Professor Oak's like, no, you need to raise Pokemon to be strong. I don't think you have the right attitude for this, and you should just go home. And Gilbert's like, you don't got to tell me twice. Bye. So then he turns and falls off the cliff.
Oh my god.
Bulbasaur saves him. And then seconds later, they find the Squirtle. And the same thing happens to the Squirtle that falls to its death. But Professor Oak catches it, and then Bulbasaur saves both of them. And there's a whole silly sequence where Bulbasaur is trying to get Squirtle to come out of its shell because it's rightfully scared from its near-death experience. And it's only Gilbert doing a comedy routine of pretending to be Professor Oak by putting leaves on his eyebrows.
That was so funny.
And then making silly faces like you do at a baby. That gets the Squirtle to get over its CPTSD.
I loved that, because Professor Oak has giant eyebrows, like Groucho Marx eyebrows, and so Gilbert's first thing to do is put the leaves on his eyebrow. Like, that was amazing.
I like the visual gag, but Gilbert didn't do a Professor Oak impression was the problem.
True. You know, 5 out of 10. Solid effort, yeah. But, you know, not so great execution.
So the search teams meet up, and they find the lost baby Bulbasaur, which has pissed off some primates. Oh, actually, it's DJ Masai who points them in the right direction. And they find the Bulbasaur. I don't quite remember what happens, but basically they get the Bulbasaur out of the tree until Mimey's psychic concentration is broken and it goes plummeting into the rampage of primates.
Gee, thanks, Mimey.
It's chaos, it's madness, eventually ends with Gilbert and the little Bulbasaur running off in their own direction, and they are nearly chased off a cliff. Oh my god, a lot of falling off cliffs today. In the valley town of Pallet, okay.
Yeah, where's all these cliffs? Have we ever seen any, like, sheer cliffs around Pallet Town before? I don't recall
that. I know they're at the base of the mountains, but, like, how far out of Pallet Town did they go to get all these cliffs?
True, good point. I don't know. Maybe, who knows?
But it's okay, because Bulbasaur is a super badass. He moves the little ones away from the primates with his vines and uses a solar beam to scare them all off. And Gilbert's like, wow, I really learned a lesson on how cool Bulbasaurs are. I'm going to pick Bulbasaur. And he does, and he's off to start his journey, having been humbled, until 3 days later when he gave up after shitting his pants too many times and came home, never to be seen again.
Oh, well, that's such a shame.
That's my little fanfiction addendum to this episode.
How do we know it was 3 days? He only lasted 3 days?
Okay, 3 hours.
3 hours. Oh, okay. Maybe he died. Maybe he, like, fell off a cliff. There are a lot of them around.
He's already fallen off 2 cliffs a day.
So, you know, everything happens in threes, so I wouldn't be surprised if he fell off another cliff with Bulbasaur and R.I.P. Gilbert. Wow, that was so fun.
So why'd you like this episode so much? Was it just because it's fun to be in Pallet Town and see
it is.
The characters you don't normally see? Is that all?
I know. I always poke fun. I know we do rib on Gen 1 and we're like, oh my god, Palatown. Oh my god, Kanto. So overdone. But like, I love, you know, I love Oak. You know, I love Delia. Anytime we get to see them. And plus, like, I thought Oak was kind of a... His interaction with Gilbert was funny, giving him shit. And I was like, oh, Oak, I didn't know you had that kind of sassiness.
Yeah, Oak being a sarcastic hard ass is the Oak that we like the most.
I love it. That's my favorite Oak. Not when he's like loopy and like ineffectual when he's getting kidnapped and stuff.
I don't like stupid Oak. That's not fun.
I like exactly what you said, when he's like a sarcastic hard ass who just... says some blunt shit right to your face and you're like, whoa, okay. And it's just fun overall. Like, it wasn't drawn out too much. It was a decent plot, and the kid kind of redeemed himself and learned the value of friendship, and we always love that.
Oh, it just hit me all of a sudden.
What?
You know who this episode could have been about instead of Gilbert Grape?
Who?
Leaf, the female player character from Fire Red, Leaf Green.
They could have used that as a perfect opportunity to market Fire Red and Leaf Green and the character, the new female character especially.
Oh, well. Wow.
Missed opportunity as per usual for Pokemon. Who's doing MVP, LVP quote first?
Me.
Go for it.
My MVP. I don't know. Jeez. My MVP will be Mimi. For his use of psychic abilities to save everyone at various points. He couldn't maintain it at one point, but he gave it a try. And my LVP is going to be Ash's stupid Tauros for just running through the wall and then running through another wall.
Herd mentality for sure.
My quote, All right, I'm going to say Professor Oak saying, "You and I will go look around the mountain." And Gilbert says, "What about the valley? We won't have to climb as much."
I felt that. Those are good picks, Austin. Okay. For my MVP, I think I'm going to give it to Professor Oak.
Oh.
Have I ever given Oak MVP before? I mean, surely I have, right?
Not recently.
I liked him this episode. I thought he was fun. He was sassy and sarcastic. And I think I'm just basing that off of the interaction he had with that kid. He was like, well, if you don't like it, you know, tough titties, kid. Go home. Like... he isn't trying to sugarcoat it.
I found it interesting he was so tough with Gilbert, given the nepotism. Because apparently, Mr. Mayor is a big supporter of the Oak Laboratory.
Right.
And Delia seems to have voted for that mayor. She seems to be a fan. So I guess he's, like, you know, doing local legislature to make sure the Oak Lab is doing well. Because, you know, it's probably the only thing of note in Pallet Town.
That is such a good point. I don't think we talked about this earlier, where... before Gilbert even arrives, Oak is like, ooh, everything's got to be ship-shape and perfect. We got to make sure this goes well and we get a good review, basically, because this is the mayor's kid and dad donates a lot to this lab and we got to keep kissing ass and making sure he keeps donating.
It's nice to get a little look into Pallet Town local politics.
Isn't it great? We got a peek into that. We got a peek into their local radio station. I don't know. Maybe that was also part of the reason why I liked this episode. But yeah, I guess when he's alone and he could be his real self and he's not putting on a show for the mayor, Oak is like, well, tough love, kid. And this isn't Ash. This isn't Delia's son. He has a special soft spot for. He's going to tell him like it is.
Okay, I will say, obviously, Ash is Oak's favored child.
Yes, of course.
But he'll give Ash shit. That was like their whole dynamic in the first season.
That is, yeah, okay, true.
He tells Ash how it is.
Okay, LVP. I am going to do the opposite of you. I'm going to give Mimi LVP.
Oh.
Because I think Mimi definitely could have stepped in at other opportunities without letting things go along as far as they did and, you know, become chaotic. Like, at first, he could have rescued Charmander from falling in the water. He let Tracy wade in and start to drown as well. And it was only until Delia said something that Mimi actually did something. Which, you know what? Oh my gosh. Should I actually give Delia LVP for allowing that?
Is that allowed?
Guys, should I even?
I will say this. Delia wears that ugly pink top, latch in the front thing.
I don't even know if I have the heart. But should I? Should I be real? Should I be true to my feelings? You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do a very novel thing, and I'm going to give Delia LVP.
What about Mimi?
Dun, dun, dun. And, you know, by extension, Mimi, because she let Mimi just stand there. She just stood there, didn't do anything. She has a psychic Pokemon who knows how to battle. She could have been like, you know, use psychic, get Charmander over here. Tracy doesn't have to risk his life going into the water or anything like that. And potentially Charmander dying, because she was screaming about that, by the way. She was like, oh my God, oh my God, Tracy, don't let its fire touch the water. Oh my God, Charmander, you're gonna die. Like, she was panicking, and I was like, oh my God, this is not helping. And later on, of course, the whole Bulbasaur and the primate thing, she just stood there for a while until Mimy finally leapt into action, and I can't believe a sneeze broke its concentration. Like, come on, Mimy, that's amateur hour shit.
Very the boys.
How so?
You don't know that scene?
I stopped watching after season 2, I think.
Oh, I think it's season 3.
Okay.
I've never seen The Boys, but I know of this scene.
What's the scene? Spoiler, I guess. I don't know.
When the guy, the shrinking guy, goes into the other guy's penis.
Oh, I saw that scene.
Yeah, and then he sneezes and explodes. And
yeah, oh, I know what you're talking about.
Our podcast is not for children, by the way.
Yeah, no, we say E for explicit. Also, spoiler over.
Yep.
Yeah, E for explicit. So that's on you guys. We don't make any bones about it.
No bones, only boners.
Only boners on this podcast. Yeah, so sorry, Delia. I'm so shocked at myself. My quote is the only one I have, and it's after Oak has lectured Gilbert about being a coward. Gilbert is completely fine to walk away from this. He's like, whatever, I haven't signed a contract. I didn't commit to anything. I'm out of here. He sees the Squirtle dying, and he's like, what do we do? He screams at Oak, and he's like, oh, wait, I just quit. Later. And he walks away and then falls. But that's it. Okay. We are done.
Ooh.
Woo.
Next week, we are doing a weird one.
Oh, yeah. Let us know. This is a deviation from our normal scheduled programming again.
We're going to do our annual-ish fanfiction episode.
Ooh.
And after Alex's Stephen King-inspired episode last year, we're going to do horror fanfiction for our Halloween special, because we couldn't figure anything else out for Halloween. So fanfiction it is!
Yeah! We definitely wanted to do something to celebrate spooky season. Austin and I love Halloween, so look forward to another, well, at least in my case, a badly written fanfiction.
Mine too, don't worry.
You said that we are going to pick randomly our prompt.
Okay, I have a list of 101 horror story prompts from screencraft.org. I haven't looked at these, so I don't know if they're any good or not.
Oh God, I guess we're gonna find out. We're doing it live, people.
So how about you pick a number and that will be your prompt. Unless you don't like it, then you can pick another number.
Oh, that defeats the whole.
Well, if it's something stupid, I don't know.
Okay, we can get one do-over, I suppose.
Maybe we should pick three numbers and pick which of the three we like.
Okay, that's
good. Does that sound fair?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to pick lucky number 13, of course.
Mm-hmm.
88, because that's
okay.
Random. And I'm going to go out of order. I'm going to pick 25, because we're in Halloween 2025, so 25. And what's funnier than 24? 25.
Okay, so number 13 is, a woman afraid of clowns is forced to work in a traveling circus.
Oh, that's so fun, actually. Oh my God, a traveling circus with a bunch of mimes and, like, you know, Mr. Mimes and, like, what's other clown Pokemon?
Okay, don't write this fan fiction.
Okay, yet. Okay. I'm sorry. I got excited.
25 is, Earth suffers a planet-wide blackout as all technology is lost.
Oh my God, okay.
Just an idea? Pokeballs.
Austin, that's such a good idea. Oh my gosh. Okay. The wheels are turning. Okay, what's the last one?
A woman is watching a scary movie alone on Halloween night. Someone or something keeps knocking at her door.
Ooh, these are some good ones. Oh my goodness. I could do so much. I have to think about it. Oh my God. I only have a week to decide. Ah!
Okay, I'm going to pick 22.
Okay.
69, because it's a funny number.
Of course.
And 100.
Okay, can you send me these two, by the way? Because I'm not going to remember.
Oh, you're not going to pick it now? You got to tell us later?
Oh, I have to pick now. Oh, God.
Oh, do you want to pick now or do you want to pick later?
Do you think it'd be fun to pick, or do you think it'd be fun to surprise people with one of those three?
Let's do a surprise.
Okay.
Especially if you start one and you can't figure it out and you got another option.
I don't want to disappoint if I encounter a writer's block. So we'll surprise you with one of the three options that we have. So stay tuned to see what we end up creating.
And these are mine. 22 is a girl wakes up to find a little boy sitting on his bed. On his bed, claiming to be her younger brother, but she never had one.
Oh.
Okay, that one has some confusing genders going on.
I think they meant her bed.
Yes.
But
maybe I could play with that, actually.
Or, yeah, you could use it.
Ooh, let's get some queer horror in here. What was the next one? 69. Speaking of queer horror.
69.
Something ancient rises from an old pond.
Ooh, that's kind of fun. You could do a lot with that. Oh.
100. A child's imaginary friend is not imaginary.
Hmm.
I already know what I'm going to do with that.
So is that the one you already picked?
No, I'm not sure, but I have an idea for that one immediately.
Oh, I want to know. I'm so curious, but I know you're not going to tell me.
All right, we'll do that next week.
Oh, that'll be fun. Okay.
Don't wait till the last minute.
I know. I got to actually write, because last time I think I did wait until the last minute, and I wrote... That's right. Oh my gosh, because I told you, I was up until like 2 in the morning writing the fan fiction for the next day, and you know what? That's when I write my best.
Feel free to combine your prompts if you want to, or write multiples.
Okay. I don't know. I might do a collection like you've done before where you write like different little short stories for different things. I don't know. It depends.
That's what I would always do in my like writing classes when it was my turn to lead a class.
Yeah.
As I would write multiple things or bring in things I'd already written. And multiple, so that if one was not a success, another one would be.
That's a good idea. You know, cast a wide net and see what kind of gets a bite. But like, it depends. It depends on if I can come up with like a good idea that has a strong enough like story that I can make a whole thing, or if it's better to just sort of do a little paragraph short thing. I don't know. We'll see.
So next week's fan fiction week. If you're not interested, that's fine. Just leave 5 stars and listen to the next one after that.
All right. Well, look forward to that. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode, our big 200. Thank you guys again for sticking with us, and we hope to have many more. If you want to get in touch with us, like we said, you can reach out to us on our socials. We have our email account. You can always email outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Again, outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. We also have a Blue Sky and an Instagram. Both have the same handle, @outofthedryingpan. We also have a Patreon. If you like what we do and you want to support us, we would really appreciate it. Check out our link. It's in our description. We got all kinds of cool bonus content. You can always look forward to more. So we really appreciate the support. It helps keep us going. And as always, we want to say thank you guys so much, so, so much for sticking with us this long. And we hope that you will continue to stick with us as the journey continues.